Good afternoon, America. This is Mark Levine. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Most of you have been listening all week. I appreciate that. I'm a former congressional attorney. Used to work for the Democrats on the Homeland Security Department and Judiciary Committee. And I'm here on the air now to give you the Inside Scoop. What's going on with Richard Clark is fascinating. It's fascinating for all kinds of reasons. It's fascinating for political reasons. It's fascinating because it shows what kind of liars the Bush administration is. It's fascinating because it's the beginning of the end, I believe, of the Bush administration. But that's not the reason it's most fascinating. It's fascinating to me because the stuff that Richard Clark has been saying is explosive. I spent, all night practically last night going over the transcripts of the hearings, going back and forth. I reported on the air back in July some of these things, there was a Clinton plan to go after Al-Qaeda that was not in put place by the Bush administration. And when I said those things back in July, I got to tell you, people thought I was crazy. It's kind of like when Howard Dean said that our country isn't safer since we went to war in Iraq. But now you have Richard Clark saying the same thing, saying in effect that our war in Iraq has diverted attention from the war against terrorism in Afghanistan. Look, I want to go over this. And again, one of the nice things about radio is that we can explore this in detail. We don't have to just deal with snippets and sound bites on television. If you've missed some of this testimony, or even if you've seen the testimony, but you want to know the inside scoop behind the testimony, you got to stay involved. You got to listen to this hour, these 2 hours, I should say. Look, Richard Clark has spent 30 years in government. In fact, I think he's the longest official in any high-level position that was in government. He was appointed to be in charge of counterterrorism by Ronald Reagan. He's a registered Republican. In fact, he even says in the year 2000 he was still a registered Republican. I don't know what he is now. But he was appointed by Ronald Reagan. He was reappointed by George Bush the First. He served President Clinton, and then he served Bush the Second. And the heart of his testimony, that the bottom line is that Clinton, for Bill Clinton, there was no higher priority than fighting terrorism. Bill Clinton understood that in the post-Cold War world, after the Soviet Union was gone, the most important thing that our country could do was work to fight terrorism. And that for Bush, it just wasn't urgent. He just didn't understand the urgency. And Clark was going on how he and George Tenet, head of the CIA, they had their hair on fire. That's a quote. Hair on fire. Practically begging the president to take Al-Qaeda seriously. And this president wasn't doing it. Instead, he was going on vacation. Clark was told that his memos just had to be read by the lower-level people. And we're going to go through all the history of this. I'm going to give you all the details you could possibly want to know. And we're going to conclude by talking about the attacks. Because the president has not attacked Clark in terms of what he's saying. They have nothing to say. You can see the administration, Condoleezza Rice, is going on channel after channel trying to attack this man's credibility, this Republican career servant who has done nothing if not try to prevent Americans from being attacked, try to save us. And they're going around and they're attacking his character right and left. But what they're not attacking is the substance of what he's saying. And when they do, their lies get so convoluted, they contradict themselves. We're going to explore all of this hour. And if you want to call in, if you want to ask me a question about it or give your own observations about the 9/11 Commission, Richard Clark's role in it, hey, even if you want to attack Richard Clark, you can try. I think it's pretty hard to do, but call in. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number, 877-577-2667. As I said, my name is Mark Levine, if you haven't heard my show before. I used to work as an attorney in Congress, and I remember sitting on the Homeland Security Committee, listening to the Department of Homeland Security, finding out that this department, which was supposed to prevent terrorist attacks, it was in fact designed to do that. Democrats proposed the department at first. The idea was to draw in intelligence from all kinds of sources, CIA, FBI, domestic, foreign, bring it in one place and use this information to protect us from attacks. And I remember sitting in the committee, and there was a guy there by the name of Paul Redmond. And Paul Redmond testified before us, and he was in charge of protecting America from bioterrorist attacks. Now, you would think the administration was concerned about bioterrorism attacks. After all, According to them, we went to war in Iraq to prevent Saddam Hussein from using biological weapons against us. So you would think that if that was the reason to go to war, at least they would be concerned about protecting America from bioterrorist attacks, and not just preventing Saddam Hussein from having them. After all, why are we against him having them? Presumably because we're against him attacking us with them. So they asked Paul Redmond, they said, how many people are in your department? And this was in 2002. It was more than 9 months after the department had been formed and more than a year after 9/11. And in fact, I think actually, now I take it back, I remember, it was early 2003. It was early 2003. And we heard Paul Redmond. He said, well, I'm the only guy in this department. I'm the only one. And Democrats and Republicans were stunned. And they said to him, hey, you know, Mr. Redmond, why aren't more people being hired? And he said, well, they haven't given us the office space. And again, it was wild to see the Republican chairman, his mouth open, Chairman Cox of California, and he was saying, well, but isn't bioterrorism, isn't that a significant threat to the United States? And Paul Redmond said, yes. In fact, the president is trying to deal with it under a new off-the-shelf intelligence agency that he created called the Terrorist Threat Integration Center. And that's one, of course, that's not in the law that developed the Department of Homeland Security. It's an off-the-shelf thing for the president that has no congressional oversight, has no basis in law, and in fact, the Department of Homeland Security wasn't even getting the information. And I found out, and by the way, if I talked about July, the story that we're talking about now, that, you know, Iraq diverting weapons from Afghanistan or Bush not being ready for al-Qaeda, here's a story that I'm telling you again that I said back in July that is still not broken very much in the mainstream press, and that is how unsafe we are today. How unsafe we are today because the Department of Homeland Security is not being supported by the Bush administration, largely because it involves congressional oversight. Anyway, I went home that day. I remember I looked in the papers. I turned on the evening news. I couldn't wait to see what, you know, Paul Redmond's revelations were going to be. I mean, how was CBS, ABC, CNN going to deal with it? The problem was there were no reporters in the room. I don't know, maybe there was one reporter for the Congressional Quarterly, but there was no reporter of any mainstream press there, and it got no press. And I remember a couple days later reading on page A25 or something of the Washington Post a very small article that said that Paul Redmond had resigned for health reasons. You know, he looked very healthy to me. And that's really when I decided I need to get out of government and come on the air and give you the inside scoop. What we're seeing now with Richard Clark, what we're seeing is that he is finally getting out in the mainstream press all the things that we have whispered about in Congress for years now, all the things that we Democratic staffers knew, that people in levels of government knew, people in intelligence agencies, people who've been feeding me the scoop all these many months. Now, finally, it's going public, and I say it's about time. And I don't know if any of you saw at least the very beginning of that hearing when Richard Clark did the only honorable thing you could do. What did he do? He stood up. He took the oath. Again, you know, Condoleezza Rice won't testify under oath. She will talk on news shows, but won't testify under oath. And then he sat down and he said, look, I've described to your committees in detail, 15 hours, 6 hours, a lot of these things. But there is one thing I want to say in public, and that is to the victims of September 11th, to their families. He said, I want to apologize. He said, we tried hard. I particularly tried hard, but we failed you. We failed you. No matter how hard we tried, there are thousands dead. We failed you. And I apologize, and I hope that one day you will forgive me. And you could hear a pin drop in the room. There was silence. I think even the victims' families were too stunned. This is the first person in the Bush administration. Of course, he's resigned now. He's not in the Bush administration anymore, but he was the first administration official to actually apologize for 9/11. And when you think about it, well, of course that's the right thing to do. You've got to apologize. There was a gross failure here. When 3,000 Americans die, that's not an oops. That's a serious, serious problem. And he apologized. And, you know, just the humility of this man who tried so hard to convince Bush to take this seriously, it was very, very powerful. And, you know, it's actually a lesson learned, you know, totally apart from partisan politics. I remember back in the Iran-Contra affair, when Ronald Reagan did sell arms to terrorists to release hostages and did help fund illegally the Contras, at least his administration did. I'm not sure to this day what Ronald Reagan knew or didn't know. But when he found out it happened, he immediately ordered an investigation to get to the bottom of it. He had a commission investigate it fully. All his men came up. Ollie North lied to Congress. That's been proved. He was convicted of it. Admiral Poindexter said, I don't recall, I think 700-something times. So his men were lying. But Ronald Reagan, and I don't give Reagan a lot of credit, but he was a decent enough man to realize he made a mistake, a grievous mistake that affected American security. He apologized for it, and he said, I'm going to give every paper I can to the commission. I'll let my national security advisor, everyone talk, and get to the bottom of this. And, you know, I didn't much like Ronald Reagan, I admit that, but compared to George W. Bush, Reagan's a saint. Because compared to George W. Bush, Reagan, although I totally disagree with his politics, at least was, dare I say it, patriotic enough to realize that his country, the United States of America, is more important than any partisan consequence. And that if he had to admit an error, he should, rather than trying to cover it up. I mean, that was, after all, that was Nixon's mistake, right? Nixon covered up the illegal goings-on of his administration, and he was forced out of office for it. So I want to hear what you think about this, by the way. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. But I also want to go through the chronology of all of this. I want to start at the beginning. I want to start at the Clinton administration, and even before the Clinton administration, because the Republicans are now, they've got this weird attack machine going on. It's very strange. They're saying Clinton didn't do enough, and Bush, did more than enough. So think about what they're saying. They're saying that Clinton didn't do enough in 8 years, and that Bush, when he had more information than Clinton, and did far less, that somehow that's to be justified. It's a very, very tough argument, and they're cutting themselves in logical circles. I myself would just say that, listen to Richard Clark when he says that for Clinton, the war was the highest priority. There was no higher priority than fighting terrorism, and that Clinton defeated the 1999 Millennium Plot precisely because he took the war on terrorism seriously. And for George W. Bush, it just wasn't urgent. I should say the Center for American Progress, which is a liberal think tank, has put out a reward for anyone that can show that any Bush official mentioned al-Qaeda publicly before September 11th. They have a reward out. If you could find it, hey, you know, send them an email, send me an email. They have a reward out. I don't think anyone can do it, or I think someone would have come forward already. Bush just didn't take it seriously. And I think the Democrats need to not just attack President Bush on the economy, on which he's a failure, and health care and education, all those things, the environment, on which he's a colossal failure, and definitely they should attack him on this. But if you look at the polls, if you look at the polls of the American people, you see that on the economy, on health care, on those things, people understand that Kerry's better than Bush. They still, though, the majority of American people believe that Bush has been strong in the war on terrorism. And what I've been saying all along for more than a year now is sometimes we can attack the president from the right. You know, if he's not keeping Americans safe, then he is a weak leader. And he's a cowardly leader. And frankly, I thought he was when he ran and hid on September 11th. I want to talk about all these things before September 11th. Before Clinton, after September 11th, I want to give the full history of what went on, give you the full inside scoop, and everything that Richard Clark is saying about it, and I also want to take your calls, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be back with more of the explosive testimony of Richard Clark and the inside scoop on it. This is Mark Levine. We'll be back right after this. We're back here on the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine. We are talking about the explosive charges of former counterterrorism advisor Richard Clark, who worked for four administrations, Reagan, Bush 1, Clinton, and Bush 2, and has been appearing before the 9/11 Commission, finally letting people know, as he put it, that for Clinton, terrorism was no higher priority. And for Bush, unfortunately, it really wasn't. We have a few technical difficulties now that we're working through, but we're going to get back to this right after these messages.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A Pyrrhic victory for opponents to a Department of Labor plan to increase overtime pay exemptions. Democrats in the U.S. Senate managed to amend a trade and tax bill with a provision that would stop the department from cutting off OT to as many as 8 million people. Efforts to remove the provision from the bill have failed, but instead of keeping debate alive on the issue, Senate Republicans yesterday pulled the legislation from the floor.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the explosive revelations of Richard Clark, former counterterrorism advisor to Ronald Reagan, George Bush I, President Clinton, and President George W. Bush. And he's coming clean, and he's saying that the Bush administration in the 9 months were there just didn't feel a sense of urgency. Just didn't feel a sense of urgency in before 9/11 like they should have. And we're going to discuss exactly what they did. We're going to go through the entire chronology of this from the beginning. And if you want to call in and you want to be heard, the number here is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. All right, let's get right to it. We know that even before President Clinton came into office, we didn't have the robust intelligence we needed to. In fact, Richard Clark testified that they needed more robust intelligence in the late 1980s and early 1990s. That, of course, was under Reagan's watch and George Bush Sr.'s watch. And really, we needed more human intelligence. We needed more spies on the ground. So that when there was an attack on the United States, the first one is 1993, the World Trade Center, we didn't know who was behind it. And in fact, no one even mentioned the words Al-Qaeda in the Clinton administration till around 95 or 96. In fact, it wasn't until much later, after the attacks on the African embassies in 98, that the pieces were put together and we found out who really was behind the World Trade Center bombing. We do know that in 1998, when the African embassies were under attack, that Bill Clinton fought back, and he fought back hard. One of the things he did is he sent cruise missiles into Afghanistan that we now know missed bin Laden by a matter of hours and did kill dozens of Al-Qaeda terrorists. We also know, by the way, that he sent missiles into a Sudanese chemical plant that was being used for chemical weapons. Now, Republicans, still today, Republicans are claiming that, Bush was just hitting an aspirin factory. Well, Richard Clark put that to rest. I heard it in the testimony just a couple days ago. He made it clear that, no, that was a real chemical weapons facility. And, in fact, of course, at the same time in 1998, Bill Clinton managed to destroy the last of Iraq's chemical biological weapons. He, with a number of targets, when Iraq kicked out the inspectors, we managed to destroy all of Saddam Hussein's chemical and biological weapons. So if you want to know where the weapons of mass destruction are, there's a simple answer. One president, President Clinton, did his job and destroyed all known quantities of them, and that's why there are none left today. But moving on, we had the attack in 1998 on Africa, and at that time, Clark says that he developed what he called the Dalinda Plan. It was a plan of diplomacy, covert action, financial and military action to go about fighting Al-Qaeda. And You have to remember, it's kind of hard to remember sometimes how America was in 1998, but do you remember what happened when Clinton attacked Afghanistan and Sudan? Republicans had a fit. They were going on all the talk shows. I remember this very clearly. How dare President Clinton try to wag the dog? Do you remember that movie? It came out during that time. How dare he try to wag the dog? President Clinton is pretending to attack terrorists and trying to take the attention off of what really matters, what matters most to the American people, what is far more important than terrorism. I'm talking, of course, about Monica Lewinsky. You see, they felt the president's private sex life was more important than saving American lives, and they excoriated him in Congress. Practically every Republican member of Congress, with a few minor exceptions like John McCain, I should say, but almost every Republican came on and viciously attacked Bill Clinton for trying to take the media's eye off of Monica Lewinsky. Well, basically, at December 1998, Clinton was so concerned about al-Qaeda that his CIA director, George Tenet, the same one that's here today, issued a declaration of war. He said, quote, "We must now enter a new phase in our effort against bin Laden. We are at war. I want no resources or people spared in this effort." Clinton did whatever he could to destroy al-Qaeda. And there was a question of whether he had enough actionable intelligence. That's a nice little code word. What it means is not just that you know where bin Laden is, but that you can take action on it. It's not just a question of having the motivation to get bin Laden, but that you know how to get him. And it was hard. It was hard. There's one example of a hunting trip where they weren't sure whether bin Laden was there or not, but they knew that the royal family of the United Arab Emirates was there. They thought bin Laden might be there. Clinton ordered missiles ready for an attack in off the coast of Pakistan, but Clark recommended against the attack, and so did the CIA, just saying we didn't know for sure that bin Laden was there, and we didn't want to go about and accidentally kill the head of an Arab country. That could have been a problem. Wait, and you'll just hear the Republicans say, Clinton didn't do something against al-Qaeda. Then came, of course, 1999 and the Millennium Threat. Now, again, it's amazing to me how people's memories change. Do you remember when people talked about Y2K? They talked about, the computers were going to fail December 31st, 1999, January 1st, 2000. Do you also remember that they were talking about a terrorist attack? I remember it mostly in the context of people not taking it seriously. What, they're going to attack us when our computers are down? I don't think people really understood that the terrorist attack had nothing to do with the computer problem, but there was indeed strong intelligence to suggest there was going to be attack on December 31st, 1999. Well, Clinton went to battle stations, as Richard Clark put it. He went to battle stations, and he ordered every day or every other day a meeting of his top advisors, head of the FBI, head of the CIA. Richard Clark was there, Attorney General was there, and they would talk every day about what they could do to stop this threat. And the INS was involved, the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And, of course, when you meet with the principals, the heads of all these departments, every single day, there's a very strong sense of urgency. And so what happened? The INS went down and said, hey, to its immigration officials, you better be careful. You better watch carefully. We expect a threat. And that goes lower down. That goes all the way down to a couple enterprising border guards, one in Washington State and one in Vermont, who both caught al-Qaeda terrorists crossing into the United States from Canada, one into Washington State and one in Vermont. They knew to be aware, they had their eyes open, they caught them, and the plot to bomb Los Angeles International Airport on December 31st, 1999, was averted. That's what happens when you have a strong leader, folks. Then, we have 2000. We have the attack on the USS Cole in Yemen, and it happened in October 2000, right before the election and about 2 months before the selection of Bush as president by the Supreme Court. And at the time, they weren't sure that bin Laden was behind it. They knew that al-Qaeda was. But they went and they made a plan anyway. And the plan, Clark had it all ready in December 2000. The plan involved aiding the Northern Alliance of Afghanistan. It involved using financial strategies to make sure al-Qaeda wasn't going to get money for terrorism. And he presented it to Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton said, you know what, I support this plan, but we have a new administration coming in. The Supreme Court had just decided that notwithstanding the way the people voted, Bush was going to be president. And if Gore had been president, of course, Clinton could have just passed it on to him. We could have gotten started right away. But Clinton decided that he didn't want to leave this on a new administration. He gave two examples. You probably know of them from the past. One is the Bay of Pigs, where Eisenhower had planned an attack on Cuba, and the new president, John Kennedy, had to go through with it, and it turned out to be a fiasco. And the other one was one that happened to Bill Clinton himself, where George H.W. Bush had planned to go into Somalia, and he left Clinton holding the bag. He did the attack just before Clinton came in office, and we all know that ended badly. So Clinton said, you know what, we'll present this plan to the transition, to the Bush administration, we'll tell them how important we think it is, and we'll let them make that decision. Well, maybe Clinton was wrong to trust the new president, because what happens? Sandy Berger goes, he's the national security advisor under Bill Clinton. He has one meeting with Condoleezza Rice, only one personal meeting where they meet face-to-face, and he says to Condoleezza Rice, the most important thing you will have to do is worry about terrorism. This has got to be the highest priority in your administration, and you will spend more time on terrorism, he said, terrorism in general, and Al-Qaeda in particular, than any other thing in your administration. And he gave her the plan, and he strongly advocated using it. So the question is, what did the Bush administration do? What did they do with the plan? We'll be back and we'll talk about exactly what the Bush administration did with the plan right after these messages.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A Pyrrhic victory for opponents to a Department of Labor plan to increase overtime pay exemptions. Democrats in the U.S. Senate managed to amend a trade and tax bill with a provision that would stop the department from cutting off OT to as many as 8 million people. Efforts to remove the provision from the bill have failed, but instead of keeping debate alive on the issue, Senate Republicans yesterday pulled the legislation from the floor. This leaves the Department of Labor free to move forward with the overtime massacre, and it's scheduled to go down on Tuesday.
15 years ago this month, an Exxon Valdez oil tanker hit a reef off the coast of Alaska, spilling millions of gallons of oil into the ocean, devastating local wildlife and communities depending on these now contaminated natural resources for survival. Hundreds of workers who were employed by Exxon as part of the toxic cleanup are now getting sick, and Alaska Community Action on Toxics members are asking the federal government to add more than $100 million to the $900 million settlement it reached with Exxon in 1991. Many workers like Phyllis LeJoe suffer from respiratory trouble, neurological impairment, liver disease, and skeletal deterioration.
I now have emphysema, asthma, multiple allergies, chemical sensitivities, and I also developed diabetes. I'm a mess, let's put it that way. The papers were full of articles about dead animals, but I never saw one report in any newspaper of any of my friends.
Exxon denies any responsibility for the workers' illnesses, suggesting these people could have been exposed to crude oil chemicals elsewhere. It's unclear as to whether Senator Tom Stevens will support the reopener request.
6,500 part-time workers at Walt Disney World have their first union contract. It raises their minimum wage, implements a grievance process, and awards seniority benefits to part-timers. The workers ratified the deal on Wednesday. It took more than a year for the company to recognize the union and seriously negotiate the new contract. Now Disney World turns its attention to negotiations with more than 25,000 full-time union workers at the park whose contract expires in May.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 93 years ago this week, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory in New York City caught fire. 146 mostly young immigrant women burnt alive because the owner had locked them in the factory. The disaster led to the creation of a series of state laws that dramatically improved safety conditions within factories. Yet fires and explosions are still a workplace hazard. The Department of Labor says fires and explosions killed more than 600 people in the last 5 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the explosive revelations of former counterterrorism czar Richard Clark, who worked for both the Clinton administration and George W. Bush, and Bush Sr. and Ronald Reagan, and has come clean and is letting everybody know exactly where was Bush before 9/11. And the answer was he was out to lunch. Folks, I often debate these issues here in Washington, D.C., and one of the questions that I'm often asked is, well, how is it that Al Gore could have done anything differently than George Bush? In fact, I've heard conservatives scoff, oh, well, I'm sure God Bush was president, not Gore, because then we'd be in real trouble. You ever heard anybody say that to you? Well, here's a good answer. Al Gore had enough experience in government, both as a senator, in federal government, as a representative. I mean, this is a guy who was understanding foreign policy decades ago. In fact, he was a bit of an expert in it, whether on military affairs. In fact, he was known as the go-to guy to understand our military capabilities. He was on the Armed Services Committee. And then, of course, he served as vice president under one of the greatest presidents of our time, Bill Clinton. Al Gore would have taken that Clinton plan that I talked about in the last half hour, the Clinton plan developed in December of 2000, he would have run with it. There's no doubt in my mind that Al Gore would have begun his administration, hit the ground running, and gone after Al-Qaeda. Let's compare that with what we know now that George W. Bush actually did. There was a memo that Richard Clark sent to Condoleezza Rice, Bush's national security advisor, that he sent to her on January 25th, 2001. This is 5 days, of course, after Bush becomes president. Under the Constitution, the presidency changes on January 20th. And he sends this memo to Condoleezza Rice. It's marked urgent, underlined, and says, urgently, he needs to have a principles review to discuss the impending Al-Qaeda attack on America. Now, what is a principles review? That means that he wants to talk to cabinet officials. He wants to talk to Don Rumsfeld, Secretary of Defense. He wants to talk to Secretary of State Colin Powell. He wants to talk to National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice. He needs them urgently to discuss the impending Al-Qaeda attack. Well, he was dismissed as someone being obsessed. I mean, the question there really is why do they keep him in the first place? Now, the Bush officials are all over the map, and we're going to get in the next hour to talking about the attacks of the Bush administration on Richard Clark. But they said, at least Stephen Hadley said, this is Rice's deputy secretary for the National Security Advisor, said that he was knowledgeable and informed and worked hard, and they complimented him until he criticized the Bush administration. But the question is, why wouldn't they listen to him? Here's what the memo planned. He said he wanted to give covert aid to the Northern Alliance, higher budget authority. He wanted to do the response to the attack on the USS Cole in Yemen that was done in December of 2000. Basically, he wanted to implement the Clinton strategy paper from December 2000. He wanted to implement the paper that National Security Advisor Berger under Clinton had given to the new National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice. Well, he was told, sorry, you're going to have to report to the deputies, not the principals. Go talk to our deputies. Talk to the Deputy Secretary of Defense. Talk to the Deputy National Security Advisor. So he did. He talked to the Deputy Secretary of Defense. That would be Paul Wolfowitz. And Paul Wolfowitz said, why are you worried about this little guy, quote unquote, meaning bin Laden, some little guy. Why aren't you worried about Saddam Hussein? Why aren't you worried about Iraq? And Richard Clark told Wolfowitz, hey, you know, Iraq hasn't had a terrorist attack in 8 years, not since they tried to kill President George H.W. Bush. And when they did that, of course, Clinton responded. Clinton bombed their intelligence agency in Iraq and made it clear that the leaders of Iraq would be next. And Saddam Hussein apparently listened to Bill Clinton because he didn't do another terrorist attack in the next 8 years. So Richard Clark told Wolfowitz, he said, hey, you know, Saddam Hussein is quiet, but Al-Qaeda is a real impending threat. Wolfowitz didn't believe him. So he went to Stephen Hadley. Stephen Hadley, of course, is the Deputy National Security Advisor. He's the guy that went on 60 Minutes to at first defend Clark until he found out what Clark was saying, and then to attack Clark, which was really kind of a funny jiu-jitsu maneuver to kind of turn on him right when he found out what he said. In fact, Hadley on 60 Minutes just, I heard him recently say that, you know, there's no evidence that President Bush told told Richard Clark to focus on Iraq instead of Al-Qaeda. Well, then, of course, Leslie Stahl pointed out to him that there were two witnesses and Hadley was in trouble. But anyway, going back to Hadley, also didn't think things were very important. They slow-walked it. They said that we can meet with you in April. So again, he has the paper in January. He can't even meet with the deputies until April. And then Stephen Hadley, Deputy Secretary to Condoleezza Rice, says, well, we can talk about Al-Qaeda and helping the Northern Alliance, but we also want to talk about drugs in Afghanistan. We really want to fight those drugs. We want to talk about narcotics problems. We want to have a few more meetings. We want to have talk about nuclear proliferation in South Asia, making Pakistan a democracy. Richard Clark said, hey, you know, that's all well and good. You know, I support democracy in Pakistan, and we should talk about nuclear proliferation in South Asia. And, you know, I don't know about drugs in Afghanistan, but I really think the important thing is to talk about the impending Al-Qaeda attack that can kill hundreds of Americans. They said, well, we'll put this all in one package and we'll get back to you. And what happens in May 2001, our administration is so concerned about drugs that we use back channels, we persuade the Taliban to cut down on the use of opium, on growing opium in Afghanistan. And then we give $41 million in aid to famine victims in Afghanistan. We actually give the aid to Afghanistan in May 2001. That's something that's very rarely talked about. And we do it largely because we're happy about them cutting down on drugs. Anyway, Clark gets very, very frustrated by this, and he's saying, look, they're going to attack. He and George Tenet are saying virtually every day that there's this huge chatter, this intelligence chatter. People are saying there is an impending attack. Again, I think Al Gore would have understood this, having been in government, but George Bush, having been governor of Texas, maybe he didn't really understand how unprecedented this level of intelligence chatter was. And they weren't listening to him, and he got so frustrated, he said, look, you know, if you won't let me help you with terrorism, then at least let me help you with cybersecurity, with protecting our nation's computers, because our nation's computers are also vulnerable to attack. I feel that's very important. And if you're not going to let me, you know, worry about Al-Qaeda, at least let me do something where you know, you'll let me worry about it. So in May or June of 2001, he asked to be reassigned to cybersecurity. Hadley agreed. This is, again, Rice's deputy, National Security Advisor. And he is to be reassigned on October 1st. So Clark is still working on terrorism, but he's so upset that he's asked to be reassigned. That's to happen October 1st. Finally, in July 2001, Hadley is ready to go to the principals, go to the cabinet secretaries, go to the president, and talk about the threat from Al-Qaeda. But it's now August, and George W. Bush is about to take the longest vacation in the history of the presidency since World War II. He was on vacation for, I believe it's 43 days. I may have to check on that. I do know it is the longest vacation in the since World War II. You know, he's worked so hard those 7 months, or maybe six, he's president, I guess he needs a break. You know, given all those tax cuts to the rich, I guess that just wears you out. So he needs a break. They can't meet yet. And finally, they meet September 4th. Now, again, the chatter is enormous. The knowledge that something's going to happen is enormous, and nothing's being done. Did you know that 13 of the 19 hijackers came into this country between June 2001 and August 2001? Two-thirds of the hijackers came in at a time when Clark was desperately trying to get the word out that George Bush was on vacation. So he comes in September 4th. A week before September 11th, of course, and he writes a very blunt, very strong memo expressing his frustrations, blasting the defense of the Department of Defense for not aiding the Northern Alliance that was fighting the Taliban. You may remember on September 10th, the head of the Northern Alliance was killed by Al-Qaeda. And he writes in his memo, and this is a direct quote, "Imagine a day after hundreds of Americans lay dead at home or abroad after a terrorist attack, and ask themselves what else they could have done," unquote. This memo was written a week before September 11th. And what Clark believes is that the recommendations he made in January, most of which, by the way, were put in place after the September 11th attack, he thinks it should have been done before the September 11th attack. He was asked what could have been done. He reminded the commission of what Clinton had done during the Millennium Plot. And he said that when the president calls in the principals every day and demands results, that filters down. That filters down to the lower people. And let's remember what the lower people, what the people at the local level of the FBI knew. Do you remember Colleen Rowley? That intrepid FBI agent who discovered that a Arab man by the name of Zacharias Moussaoui was trying to go to flight school and learn how to steer planes, but not land them. As far as I know, not even take them off either. He didn't need to do a takeoff, and he didn't need to do a landing. He just wanted to know how to steer them. She reported that to the FBI, and they said, you know, okay, well, we'll look into Moussaoui, and they picked him up. They actually arrested him. And she said, well, I think this needs to be reported up the line to the highest levels of the FBI. And they said, you know, Ms. Rowley, thank you very much for this information. Have a nice day. And she got so upset that she took it to higher levels in the FBI, and they did nothing. What we do know, of course, is those higher-level people are still in the Bush administration today, and they've not been fired. But what Clark is saying, just as Colleen Rowley is trying to reach up the bureaucratic train, the bureaucratic chain, trying desperately to get someone to listen to what she has to say, you have Clark reaching down, trying to find out if there's anything wrong. And if the president had taken the threat of Al-Qaeda seriously, there's no doubt in my mind he would have said to the FBI director, Mueller, he would have said, Mueller, if anybody says anything that remotely sounds suspicious about a terrorist attack, you let me know. That's what a strong leader would have done, particularly when the threat level in 2001 exceeded anything that CIA Director Tenet or Richard Clark had seen in 30 years. As I said, they said their hair was on fire. They knew something drastic was about to happen. At this time, when Bush became president, there were two Al-Qaeda officers in the United States. As I said, 13 more came between April and June 2001, and we did nothing. We did nothing. In fact, at Clark's insistence, he did tell the Federal Aviation Administration to worry about domestic hijacking. And John Ashcroft got so scared, Attorney General John Ashcroft, that he didn't take any domestic flights. But Bush was focused on his tax cut. He just wasn't focused on Al-Qaeda. And there really can't be any doubt about this. I mean, that's what's so amazing, is that when you hear the president attacking Richard Clark, they're attacking him personally. They're not attacking what he had to say. Clark said that had the president followed his advice, those two senior Al-Qaeda operatives, had he known them in the United States, he would have put their names and pictures out. He would have had a press release, front page on CBS, ABC, CNN, you know, newspapers, and suddenly everyone would be looking for those hijackers. We know, by the way, that worked in the sniper attacks in Washington, D.C. When people are warned, you know, everyone looks for them, and you can stop these people. But Bush just didn't take it seriously. And, of course, a week later, September 11th occurred. And when we get back, I'm going to talk more about Richard Clark, what happened on September 11th, and the attacks on Richard Clark afterwards. How did he serve the president after September 11th, on September 11th? And what happened, what has happened, since he's come out and told the truth? How have the Republican attack machine gone after Clark? And what are they saying? We're going to be more with all of this story and your calls, which I'll get to as soon as the story's out. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP. If you call now, you can hear it while you're on hold on the phone. And when I finish, I want to hear from you. What do you think about the failure of the Bush administration to stop the most vicious attack on American soil by a foreign power since the British burned down Washington in 1812. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Richard Clark really stung the Bushies, didn't he? Clark, a longtime counterterrorism chief, recently broke silence to reveal that George W. himself, as well as such aides as Donnie Rumsfeld and Condi Rice, refused to take the Al-Qaeda terrorist threat seriously prior to September 11th, instead focusing single-mindedly on Iraq, which posed no threat to the U.S. Even after Al-Qaeda terrorists attacked us, Clark says the Bushites irrationally diverted our forces to Iraq. Clark bluntly says he's outraged to see Bush now using the symbols of the September 11th horrors as a campaign device when he did nothing to stop the attacks, despite ample warnings. The Bushites have since waged a White House jihad against Clark, calling him a left-wing, Democrat-hugging, partisan sourpuss who is a disgruntled, politically motivated bureaucrat, angry that he didn't get a higher job in the Bush regime, and worst of all, he's a friend of an advisor to John Kerry. So there you have it. Clark has no credibility to debate over. They wish. Clark is a registered Republican. He is a career national security official with 30 years of public service. So valued was his terrorism expertise that he was continued as a top White House security aide by Ronald Reagan, Daddy George Bush, Bill Clinton, and George W. Morton Abramowitz, a top intelligence appointee under Reagan, says bluntly, "I can only tell you I think Dick has enormous credibility, a first-class intellect, very dedicated, a serious player. You can't overlook what Dick is saying. What he's saying is shocking." Bush and his insiders knew that Iraq was not behind September 11th, yet they knowingly sent Americans to die there under false pretenses. Clark says, "I think for a commander-in-chief to allow that to happen is unconscionable." This is Jim Hightower saying, "The Bushites can try to smear Clark, but they're the ones with an indelible stain on them."
I wonder who this unexpected guest might be. Good afternoon.
A circus. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is more versatile flooring with Plitanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Unlike other subfloor materials which limit your flooring options, Plitanium allows you to use hardwoods, carpeting, vinyl, or ceramic tile. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works. Not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the explosive revelations of Richard Clark. And yes, it's even worse than I had known. And I had gotten a lot of information from various people in the administration, in Congress. And yes, it's even worse than I'd known. Of course, we had Vice President Cheney, who headed not just the Energy Commission, but also the commission in charge of focusing on terrorism. Did you know that? You probably didn't, because virtually nobody mentions it these days. But I think it's fair to say that Vice President Cheney spent a little more time working with energy companies than he did working to fight terrorism. And don't let anyone tell you that Bill Clinton wasn't active in trying to fight Al-Qaeda. Don't let anyone use this crap claim that Sudan offered Clinton bin Laden on a silver platter. That happens to be false. In fact, I just read Charles Krauthammer report that really, really, I mean, it's a lie. What happened, by the way, on that, just so you know, you can tell your friends at the water cooler, is that there was a group in Sudan that claimed to have bin Laden, and they said that the Sudanese government would turn him over. So Clinton explored it, and he went to the Sudanese government, and the Sudanese government said, "No, we don't have him. We're not going to turn him over." That's that. So don't anyone make that claim. But I'll tell you where we did have a chance to get bin Laden. We had a chance to get bin Laden in the 8 months between January 20th, 2001, when George Bush became president, and the attacks on September 11th, 2001. You see, we have this spy plane called the Predator that had just been developed. And Richard Clark was arguing that this spy plane, which actually was working hard to find Al-Qaeda, to find bin Laden, that they should arm it so that if they found bin Laden, they could shoot and kill him. Well, they didn't want to do that. The CIA apparently was afraid of losing their plane. You know, they might lose their very expensive plane. What are these planes for, folks, if not to defend us? I mean, why are we spending? Maybe we shouldn't spend any money on the military at all. That's a different question. But if we're going to spend billions of dollars on these fancy planes, I would hope we'd use them to protect us. Turns out this Predator, according to Richard Clark in his testimony under oath, he said that it found Bin Laden three times in the 8 months. He said it might have found Bin Laden three times. They weren't sure except one. One time they were absolutely sure it was Bin Laden. They think it was him the other two times. They were sure it was him that one time. If George Bush had followed Richard Clark's advice and armed the Predator, well, 3,000 Americans would be alive today, I think. I mean, I don't want to go that far. Let's just say Bin Laden would be dead, and it might have been harder to carry out the attacks on September 11th. So what happens on September 11th? Again, I guess I have to first connect this to my experience. I think every American remembers where they were on September 11th. I remember thinking to myself, this, when it happened, I remember thinking, well, this must have been what it was like when Kennedy was assassinated. I'm too young to have been alive then. Or this must have been what Americans thought on December 7th, 1941. On September 11th, 2001, I was sitting in my congressional office, I came in, I heard someone in the parking lot say that the First Trade Center had been blown up, that a plane had gone into it, and we ran in, turned on CNN, saw the First Trade Center on fire. I alerted my boss, Barney Frank, about it, and then, of course, we saw President Bush interrupt his reading to school children for all of about a minute to be whispered something in his ear, and then he continues reading to the school children. I remember thinking even at that time, Mr. President, look, I don't have much respect for you. I know you weren't elected by the American people. You were chosen by the Supreme Court. But, hey, you're in charge of protecting us. Do you think that maybe you need to tell the kids goodbye and maybe meet with your advisors? I remember thinking that before the second plane hit. And I do remember when the second plane hit because I was watching TV when that happened. Now, I admit I didn't know the first plane was a terrorist attack. I think everyone knew. Once the second plane hit, that it was a terrorist attack. I would hope there are people in the administration who've been studying this who knew that the first plane was a terrorist attack. And then I waited to hear from my president. Now again, I'm not saying he was elected. I mean, we know that's not true. That's a whole other issue. I mean, that's how, frankly, I began on the radio, was talking about the fact that George Bush was selected, not elected. That's a whole other issue. So I was not a big fan of this guy, but I knew that I am an American first. I'm an American before I'm a Democrat. I'm an American before I'm just about anything. And I wanted to see my president get on TV and let us know what's going on, even if he didn't know. He could do what Giuliani did. And I don't like Giuliani. Lots of things he did as mayor of New York. But I don't think anyone can argue that he wasn't incredible on September 11th. On September 11th, Rudolf Giuliani said, look, you know, we're going to figure out what's going on. We're going to do our best. New Yorkers, stand firm. All this kind of stuff that you know Bill Clinton would have done. You know that Bill Clinton would have done that. George Bush was nowhere to be found. George Bush was hustled off a plane, hiding. Even if he was hiding, okay, I understand you need to protect the president. He could have come on TV and said, you know, some words of encouragement, something. You know, and then, of course, the trade centers fell. Well, what really happened? We know what happened in the White House that day. By the way, just so you know, I was in a building that was next to the Capitol. Had the fourth plane, as they say that it was intended to, had that hit the Capitol, probably I would have survived. I was in, a building that's attached to the Capitol. Lots of people I know would have been killed, that's for sure. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if they'd actually taken down the U.S. Capitol? Well, anyway, the president ran. He ran. Dick Cheney ran. I understand that. I understand they have to protect themselves. Even Condoleezza Rice ran. Okay. Who was in charge? Who was the only guy left in the White House, the most senior official left when they all ran? Richard Clark. The president or vice president or security advisor, whoever it was, they left Clark in charge. They understood that he knew more about this than them. They ran for their safety. If you want to know a hero on September 11th, it's someone sitting in the White House knowing that it's quite likely that a plane is heading for the White House to blow up and take in charge. Richard Clark, you are truly an American hero. So he's there. He's taking charge. And he's ready to go and help the administration in the attack on Afghanistan. And the very next day, they're already talking about Iraq again. The very next day, for one day, they cared about Afghanistan, Taliban, the people attacking us. The next day, they're already on to Iraq. And in fact, in that week, you have Richard Clark going to Don Rumsfeld and saying, you know, we've got to attack Afghanistan. And Rumsfeld said, well, you know, the targets are better in Iraq. Well, but Afghanistan attacked us, sir. You have the President of the United States going to Richard Clark and saying, Clark, if there's a connection between Afghanistan, between the attack on Al-Qaeda and Iraq. Clark said, sir, you know, we've told you there's nothing there. According to Clark, Bush said, quote, go back over everything, everything. See if Saddam said this. Quote, but Mr. President, Al-Qaeda did this, Clark replied. Quote, I know, said the president, but see if Saddam was involved. Just look, I want to know any shred of evidence. Clark reminded the president that the CIA, the FBI, the White House, they'd all searched before. There was no link between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. And Bush spoke testily a third time, look into Iraq, look into Saddam. So Clark did. He did look into Iraq. He did look into Saddam. And a week later, he prepared a report saying, hey, look, we've looked into it, and no, it's Al-Qaeda, it's Taliban, it's Afghanistan. And could you, you know, he sent his report to the president, and it was bounced. It was thrown back by none other than Stephen Hadley, our old friend, the deputy secretary, national security advisor. By the way, Stephen Hadley's also the same guy who insisted that the lies about the aluminum tubes in Africa, that Saddam was seeking nuclear weapons from Africa. Stephen Hadley's the same guy that insisted that be in the speech. Why is this guy still working for the government? Isn't it time for him to resign? I think it's also time for his boss, Condoleezza Rice, to resign. We'll get to that. But Stephen Hadley bounced the memo back. He bounced the memo back, and he basically said, look again. Look again. See if Saddam is behind this. And as Clark writes in his book, he says, the president, George W. Bush, failed to act prior to September 11th on the threat from Al-Qaeda, despite repeated warnings, and then harvested a political windfall for taking obvious yet insufficient steps after the attacks. You know, I want to hear what you think, but I've always been surprised at all the people praising George Bush for standing strong after the attacks. What American president wouldn't? Every single member of Congress voted to attack Afghanistan, save one, save Barbara Lee. All others did, including Maxine Waters, Barney Frank, lots of liberals in Congress. So why is it that people were praising Bush then? You know, I want to take a couple calls, and then after we talk to the callers, I want to get to the Republican attack machine. I want to talk about what it is that they're saying about Richard Clark. Why it is that they're attacking his character and not the facts that he's saying? And also start going through some of the contradictions. I mean, I don't know. I guess it'd be funny if it weren't so serious. You know, it seems to me the attacks they contradict themselves, right? They say that Richard Clark was not in the loop and he didn't know anything. And they say that he never tried to tell us anything. And besides, they knew everything he was saying. Kind of reminds me like the lawyer that defends his client for borrowing a lawnmower and returning it damaged, saying, you know what, he never borrowed that lawnmower, and the lawnmower was just fine when he returned it, and it was damaged when he received it. It's just illogical. I want to get to all their attacks, and we're going to do that, and get to your calls. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. Your calls and the Republican attacks on Richard Clark's character right after these messages.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. U.S. soldiers in Iraq were plagued by low morale, experienced spikes in suicides last July and November, and lacked access to some medications sought by military mental health specialists to treat emotional problems, Army experts reported on Thursday. A 12-person Army mental health advisory team issued a 38-page report on issues faced by U.S. soldiers in Iraq, including suicide, combat stress, and the availability of help from the Army. The team traveled to Iraq from August to October 2003 and interviewed almost 760 soldiers. The report found a significant proportion of soldiers experienced and reported behavioral health concerns and that there was an unmet need for behavioral services. Trying to blunt allegations the Bush administration mishandled terror threats before September 11th, the White House is offering to let George W. Bush's top national security aide meet privately for a second time with a federal panel investigating the terrorist attacks. The offer comes amid a continued effort by the White House to discredit former counterterrorism chief Richard Clark, a tactic that is beginning to show signs of backfiring. Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle joined the fray, accusing the administration of character assassination against Clark. Questions have been raised as to why Rice has appeared on numerous television programs over the past few days, yet still refuses to testify publicly in front of the 9/11 Commission. John Curry, promising to create 10 million jobs and keep them in America, has announced a proposal to cut corporate taxes by 5% and eliminate tax loopholes that push jobs overseas. The Democratic presidential nominee-in-waiting said he would fight a reluctant Congress and special interests to carry out the most far-reaching changes in international corporate tax law in four decades. Kerry overrode the objections of some advisors who opposed the corporate tax cut on political grounds. More Minuteman News after this.
I'm Arthur Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A German woman's joy at the recovery of her missing handbag quickly turned to sorrow after she sped drunk to the police station to fetch it and had her driver's license confiscated, authorities said Thursday. She was so happy to hear about the bag, she jumped straight into the car and came down to get it, said a spokesman. The thing is, we saw her coming. She'd had a lot to drink. The 38-year-old parked in front of the police station but failed to hide the fact that she was inebriated from officers. The first thing she got out of the bag was her license, which we took, along with her car keys, said a spokesman. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about, of course, what everybody in Washington is talking about, and that's what Richard Clark is saying. In his book, Against All Enemies, Inside America's War on Terror, in his testimony before the 9/11 Commission, he is making clear that the Bush administration thought that Clinton had been overly obsessed with Al-Qaeda. They thought Clinton was just crazy, I guess, in thinking that Al-Qaeda was a serious problem. And they didn't take it seriously. We've gone through, we talked about before September 11th, we talked about what happened on September 11th. Let's talk briefly about after September 11th. Clark writes, quote, "I realized with almost a sharp physical pain that Defense Secretary Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz were going to try to take advantage of this national tragedy to promote their agenda about Iraq. Rumsfeld was complaining, hey, there are no targets in Afghanistan, we should attack Iraq." Kind of reminds me of the old joke about the guy that the drunk who lost his eyeglasses, and he's looking under a lamp, and the guy, someone goes up to him and says, "Hey, you know, what happened?" He said, "I dropped my eyeglasses." He said, "Oh, where'd you drop them?" "Oh, I dropped them over there in the dark." And he said, "Well, why are you looking under the lamp?" "Well, the light's better here." It's the same thing. I mean, let's go after Iraq. But hello, Afghanistan attacked us. We know that's why we have to attack Iraq. I don't know how that makes logical sense to anyone. But that's what they were doing. Wolfowitz says we should go after Iraq first. And then apparently Bush is not a complete idiot. He says, well, maybe we should go first after the people that attacked us. As Colin Powell has put it in his testimony before the 9/11 Commission, George Bush said first things first. In other words, let's go after the people who attacked us, Afghanistan, and then we'll go after Iraq. What was interesting to me is that was a striking admission by Colin Powell. Because the admission was that, yes, they had planned to get Iraq from the beginning, as Paul O'Neill has said, since January 2001, and they were going to go after Afghanistan and then Iraq. I know that some of you have been holding on a very long time. The number here is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. It's a toll-free number. Let's talk a bit on the air, and then I want to get to the Republican attack machine that's going on against Richard Clark, and I want to know from you if you think it's having an effect. 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you've been holding on a very long time. I appreciate your waiting. What's your name and where are you from? Caller, you still there? Maybe that call.
I can't hear you.
Oh, you are there. Hello. What's your first name and where are you from? Can you hear me? Caller? Caller, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. What's your first name and where are you from?
I'm Ed, and I'm from Morris Plains, New Jersey.
Okay, Ed from Morris Plains. Thanks for holding on a very long time. What do you think about all this?
Well, a couple things. I kind of take a different tact, I think, than you. I see a lot of what you're saying as revisionist history. I do not think that that's the case. Well, I think the two things to look at are, if you look at everything Richard Clark said before he published a book, it's 180 degrees counter to what you're saying. Secondly,
Hold on. Because I don't see that at all. Give me an example. You can't just say he's a liar, which is what you said. Give me an example.
Well, I didn't say that. What I said is you can find testimony where he was asked by reporters, is it true that that George Bush dragged his feet on going after Al-Qaeda when the administration took power? And basically he said, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but basically he said, no, that's not true. And in fact, I think he said he actually went counter to that and said that, no, actually, there was an accelerated look at
Ed,
Middle East.
Ed, are you talking about a 2002 thing that a report on background that he gave to Fox News? Is that what you're talking about? Because I know
I'm
all about that.
I'm talking about a live video feed I saw of him talking to a reporter, and I do not recall whether it was Fox News or not.
Okay, let me tell you what happened with this feed that I know about, because I think that's probably what you're talking about. He was asked in 2002 to give background information to Fox News, to give information and the Bush administration said to him, and he was still working for them at the time, accentuate the positive and, you know, don't talk about the negative. So he went before Fox News and he said, well, they did change the policy from roll back Al-Qaeda to eliminating Al-Qaeda. What he didn't tell Fox News in 2002 was that was Clark's idea, that he proposed it in January 01 and that it didn't get implemented actually ever. He finally got Rice's approval in September 4th, 2001. Bush never had a chance to sign it before September 11th occurred. So he emphasized the positive and didn't emphasize the negative. There's a fascinating exchange that you really should see between Commissioner Thompson, the former governor of Illinois, and Richard Clark, precisely on this point, where he said what you said, that it's 180 degrees different.
But doesn't his integrity come into question when he says that, in fact, we've accelerated, and then now, after he publishes a book, he says the opposite. He says, no, George Bush dragged us. I mean, at least be consistent, at least have, you know, if you could find a thread where both could be true, then maybe you could discern it. But, I mean,
well, let's talk about that. Well, what he said is that he did manage to get through to the Bush administration a week before 9/11, after 8 months of dragging their feet, that they have to go out and fight Al-Qaeda. Now, did you think that when he's told, you know, you have to go out and give a positive spin on this, I mean, maybe you think he should have resigned then and there. At the time, he was still trying to care about national security. And what's interesting about all of this is that it's on background. One of the things I find most interesting, because, listen, I'm somebody, I get all kinds of sources from people in administration, from people in Congress. I would never reveal my sources. Fox News, I would hope, would have the basic journalistic integrity not to do that. It's interesting to me that they violated one of the only solid rules of journalistic ethics there are, and that's the rule called off the record. I can't tell you how many times I talked to reporters off the record when I worked in Congress. And
well, I didn't see anything on what I saw that said it was off the record. But I think even more striking against most of what you said is simply the timeline. I mean, we identified bin Laden as a threat by 1996. By 1998, we indicted him. So you're talking about that 4 years, 2 years at least, for Richard Clark to have gotten through the Clinton administration and to do most of the things he said, at least certainly more than what you could have expected George Bush to do in really 7 months, eight, 7 months of, you know, once the administration was actually in place.
Ed, I think that's exactly illogical. Let me tell you why. Obviously, we had more and more information as time went on. Al-Qaeda was first identified, as you put it, you're absolutely right, in 1996. His first known attack on us was the embassy bombings in 1998, at which point Clinton did declare war on al-Qaeda, December 1998, and kept looking for ways to attack him with what they say actionable intelligence. And then Clinton managed to foil the Millennium Plot in 1999. Of course, you also know that we sent bombs, cruise missiles, into Afghanistan and just missed bin Laden by about 3 hours. Now, that's a lot closer than Bush has ever done, even after Tora Bora, right? So,
Now that brings to the
let me just make my point. But let me just make my point. My point is that whatever Clinton knew, these were one administration following another, and obviously you know more and more and more as time went on. If you argue Clinton didn't do enough, then clearly Bush didn't do enough because Bush had all the information Clinton had and more. The Cole attack was in October 2000. Clinton was preparing for it in December 2000 and passing on that information. And Bush officials, according to Clark, were saying, oh, well, that attack occurred on another president's watch. So we don't have to worry about that, as if it wasn't just an attack on Americans. My point is this. If you say Clinton didn't do enough, then you have to agree that Bush didn't do enough. And if you say Clinton did do enough...
I wouldn't make the charge that some people say on the right that it's Clinton's fault for 9/11, that he had 8 months to do something. I wouldn't make that point.
Okay.
But what I would argue is the attack on George Bush is myopia, that he was so focused on war in Iraq that he utilized. Well, I would say the myopia is the other way around. The myopia is saying that al-Qaeda and that somehow by taking rooting out al-Qaeda in Afghanistan would somehow eliminate the problem of terrorism from the Middle East. The real source of most of the problem was Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein caused 9/11 by forcing us to contain him by deploying troops in Saudi Arabia. If you ask any, the main root cause of all Middle East terrorism, it's the presence of U.S. troops in the Holy Kingdom.
Well, no, I agree with you that Osama bin Laden, the thing he was most angry about, I mean, that's true, was U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia.
Now, doesn't George Bush deserve some credit for identifying that root cause and seeing that, you know, we can swat at flies all we want, we can hurl Tomahawk missiles, we can even take out the Taliban completely out of power. You know what? There's still going to be Middle East terror. You know what the root cause of the Middle East terror is? The presence of U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia. The only way we're going to be able to get to that end is to actually get rid of the guy that's causing all the main cornerstone, the guy that's funding Hamas. That's Saddam Hussein.
Hey, Ed, we have troops out of Saudi Arabia now. Do you think al-Qaeda terrorism is going to stop?
I think once we establish the foothold of democracy in Iraq and we set a shining star there, I think we can start withdrawing. And I think as we start withdrawing, I think that the good feelings will start to emerge.
Really, really? Because Richard Clark, who has, you know, a lot more experience in this than you or I, says that by us diverting attention, by us actually not going after Osama bin Laden at Tora Bora, but diverting, I mean, we've actually been diverting troops from Afghanistan to fight Iraq, that not only are we harming the effort to fight al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, but we're making the Arab world so inflamed at us for attacking a country that never attacked us, unlike Afghanistan, where people understand why we're attacking, that we're actually helping al-Qaeda. We're actually increasing
my own expert, and that would be Steve Emerson on MSNBC's Terrorism Expert. He said, you know what, when you go to war in Iraq, you'll probably temporarily increase the hostilities, but over the long run, you create the possibility for a true bringing down of the level of threat.
But my question is this. Do you agree with me that al-Qaeda is a far more – and Richard Clark, that al-Qaeda is a far more serious threat to the United States right now than Saddam Hussein ever was?
It's a difference of logistics versus individual attacks. I think
al-Qaeda But do you agree with me?
The imminent threat is al-Qaeda.
Okay, all right. So just so we're clear. You
it's
agree with
–
okay, well, hold on. Okay, wait. Hold on. I just want to – just one step at a time. You agree with me that – Afghanistan and the Taliban and al-Qaeda were a more serious threat and continue to be a more serious threat today than Saddam Hussein ever was. I just want to – do you agree?
Ever was?
Yeah, ever was.
It's the difference between immediate threats versus long-term threats, and it's the difference
between
logistics.
Okay, fine. But in other words, because we have to go after an immediate threat before we go after a long-term threat, you can agree with me al-Qaeda is more dangerous than Iraq, right?
So what would
– Yes or no? I mean
– Yes or no? I'd say yes.
Okay. All right. I just want to get that straight. Now go on with your other point. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say I'd say yes to that, but I would say that, you know, you could send all the troops you want. You could have taken all the troops that we sent to Iraq, put them in Afghanistan, and that does nothing to lower the threat from al-Qaeda.
Nothing to lower the threat. Do you know what happened at Tora Bora? Let's talk about what happened in Tora Bora, because I think some people don't remember. What happened was we were in Afghanistan. We had entrapped Osama bin Laden in a cave, a whole cave complex that was on the Afghani-Pakistani border. We did not have enough troops there. We managed to rely on Pakistani troops when we could have used American troops on both sides of the border, and we could have gotten Osama bin Laden. But we didn't do that. And I think that had we gotten Osama bin Laden, then I think Bush would have gotten this huge spike in the polls, which is what he wants, because I think that's mostly what he cares about, and we wouldn't have had the war in Iraq. You don't agree?
First of all, I think that not having the war in Iraq would have been a bad thing. I think that overall, the long
he hadn't done anything in 8 years. We had him contained. Bill Clinton had destroyed all of Saddam Hussein's chemical and biological weapons.
Even if that's true, we had him contained. Containing him was basically the cause of all the resentment, all the problems that we have. He continues to embezzle money and feed money to Hamas.
Right.
He continues
Iran and
thorn in the side that he can possibly be. I mean, that was his purpose for being, right?
Hey, Ed, you're right about all of that, but you also must realize that Iran and Syria and Saudi Arabia and a whole number of other countries aided Hamas more, supported terrorism more, harbored terrorists more than Saddam Hussein did in the 90s.
I think that's disputable.
I really don't think it is. I mean, you look at Iran, which is getting close to nuclear weapons right now, and we're doing virtually nothing. Europeans, frankly, are taking a stronger stand than we are.
Right. The difference was we had a legal action to take in Iraq, and we don't have that in Iran and Syria.
Wait, hold on. We had a legal action? You mean you're talking about the United Nations? Because the United Nations didn't authorize
the resolutions.
But the United Nations didn't authorize us to go into Iraq. So how was that legal?
It was legal by our own. Basically, our agreement with Iraq was broken, and therefore we were justified legally to go to war with Iraq.
But would it have been better had we kept the overflights, kept the inspectors in, spent a few hundred million instead of 200 billion, lost no American lives instead of 550 American lives, had no wounded instead of 3,000 wounded, and instead focused on a guy by the name of Osama bin Laden and a group by the name of Al-Qaeda that had just killed 3,000 Americans?
It's the difference between, leasing peace and buying peace. You pay a lot more up front, but you own it at that point.
Hey, Ed, I appreciate discussing with you. I want to do it with another caller, but thanks very much for calling. Call in another time. The number here, folks, is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. We're talking about the explosive charges of Richard Clark that George Bush was not focused on Afghanistan, that he was focused on Iraq both before and after September 11th, that he diverted money from the war. And we're also talking about the 9/11 Commission, what George Bush knew, when he knew it, and is it a good idea to explore these things? You know, George Bush opposed the 9/11 Commission from the very beginning. He opposed it. He fought hard against it. He tried to make sure that Congress didn't pass it, but the American people overwhelmingly supported it. And when both houses of Congress passed it, of course, Bush's veto threat failed to come up because he knows better than to veto a law that would find out what he did wrong on September 11th. So he signs the bill. He signs the bill. Now, this is not congressional investigations, folks. Congress, you may not know this, but here's the scoop. The inside scoop is Congress can only investigate when the majority party wants to investigate. So when you have a one-party state like we have right now where the Republicans control the House and the Senate and the presidency, you don't have the Republicans looking into what the president is doing. And if you do, then the president sometimes says, executive privilege, I don't want to send my advisors. I think that, by the way, is wrong and unconstitutional, but sometimes presidents say that. This is different. This 9/11 Commission is a law. It's not Congress. It is a law. It is a law where the American people and the president signed this law. The American people wanted this law. The 9/11 Commission was supposed to have free, unfettered access to the president and his advisors. So what's going on after Bush fights the commission? He stonewalls on papers. They're not going to provide all the papers to the administration, to the commission. They're not going to show the president daily brief, what the president knew and when he knew it about September 11th. And they fight and they fight and they fight. And finally, they let a couple commissioners see some papers if they'll write notes to other commissioners. And then, of course, there's a discussion of Bush's testimony. I mean, Bush will not testify under oath. And then there's a discussion of, he'll testify, but he'll only do it for an hour. And he'll only do it in private. And he'll only do it before two members of the commission, not the full 10 members of the commission. And I guess that's where we are now. Condoleezza Rice, and we're going to get on to some of her attacks on Richard Clark in a minute, but Condoleezza Rice, to this day, refuses to testify in public. She has been on CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC. She's been going on air, boom, 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 attacking Richard Clark's personal character, but she won't go under oath and talk to the public about what she did on September 11th. Now, I don't know what the role of a national security advisor is. Is it to help protect the American people against terrorism? Is it to explain what happened in the Bush administration? Or is it to go on TV and publicly do attacks on career servants who are trying to tell the truth? You know, you'd think you'd get a different attack dog at least out there. You know, send Karl Rove, right? I mean, he's the guy that does the attacks. To see her on every channel, I got to tell you, we're going to get to some of these attacks in the next half hour, but I think that it's about time for Condoleezza Rice to resign. And I know that's a strong charge, but when we go into the contradictions and the lies that she's telling, not anymore about September 11th in Iraq, but just about Richard Clark, this dedicated public servant, I'm starting to think it's about time for her to leave. We're going to get to those attacks. I do want to take one more call before the half-hour break, and then we're going to get to the Republican attacks on Richard Clark. Caller, you're on the air. Thanks for holding on. This is Mark Levine. Are you there, caller?
Hi, yes, I am.
What's your first name and where are you from?
It's Rob Call with Op-Ed News.
Oh, hey, Rob. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
I'm good. What's your comment on all this?
Well, first, it was interesting. Your last caller is pulling a Bush standard routine.
Right.
Re-spinning the reason for something after the fact.
Right.
That the reason that Al-Qaeda attacked the U.S. was because the U.S. was in Saudi Arabia, and that's because we were there to protect, to deal with Iraq. So now that's a new explanation for Iraq, man. That's,
well, you know, I don't even dispute that fact. I don't even dispute that. I don't even dispute that Al-Qaeda did not like we had troops in Saudi Arabia. Okay, all right, they didn't like it. And that we had them there because of Iraq. I mean, we had them there largely because George H.W. Bush didn't finish the job back in the first Persian Gulf War. Okay. But I don't care whether they like it or not. They killed 3,000 Americans. And this idea that, oh, well, if we pull the troops out of Saudi Arabia, they're suddenly gonna go back and be calm now? I don't see it. I don't even understand the argument.
Pulling troops out of Saudi Arabia, which we've done.
Right.
This is, you know, after the attack on Spain, these have been saying that, it's terrible for Spain to pull its troops out of Iraq because that's giving into what the Al-Qaeda wants.
And that's what we're doing in Saudi Arabia, right?
That's what we've done. That's what the
right.
Bush has given the Al-Qaeda exactly what they asked for.
Right. Right. This is supposed to be our strong leader against terrorism? It's the same thing as Ronald Reagan selling arms to terrorists, only it's worse. I mean, it's worse. Because here's a case where you're absolutely right. I mean, listen to the logic of and sorry, Ed, to pick on you, but listen to your logic. What you're saying, Ed, is that they were upset because we had troops in Saudi Arabia, so we attacked Iraq just so we get the troops out of Saudi Arabia and satisfy the terrorists and do what they want. Now, if that's not the most convoluted piece of logic, I don't know what is. I don't know what it is. I think you have a good point, Rob. You still there, Rob?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. You got one last comment because we've got to go to commercial break soon.
No, it sounds like you're off to a great start here. Congratulations on the show.
Well, thanks, Rob. I appreciate that. I appreciate that very much. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
If you want to call in and make your comment on this, please feel free to do so. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. That's a toll-free number, 877-577-2667. You can also send me an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. We're going to go to a commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the attacks of the Bush administration on this dedicated public servant, Richard Clark. Back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
If you saw a news report on your local television station, then later you learned that report had actually been written by the federal government and that the reporter actually was hired by the government to read the government-written script, might that affect the report's credibility in your mind? And might it affect the credibility of your local TV station as well? Nonsense, you say, this isn't the Soviet Union, this is the land of the free, we don't allow government-scripted news in America. No? Well, maybe you've seen some recent news reports touting the benefits of George W.'s new prescription drug law for Medicare patients. Some of the segments show Bush signing the law and getting a standing ovation from those watching. One shows a pharmacist explaining the program to an elderly customer. It sounds like a good idea, says the customer. A very good idea, responds the pharmacist. Talk about puff pieces. In none of these is it mentioned that Bush's law is an exorbitantly expensive program that will benefit the drug company gougers more than senior citizens, or that the Bushites lied about the price tag in order to get Congress to okay the program. That's because this news bite was produced and distributed to TV stations nationwide by Bush's own Department of Health and Human Services. Your tax dollars at work. Lots of dollars. The agency will spend some $50 million this year on its advertising campaign to glorify the program. These news packages are called VNRs, video news releases, and they've been used for some time by corporations. Our government is simply following the corporate lead, spoon-feeding news to TV stations, which don't bother identifying the source of these packaged stories. This is Jim Hightower saying, what we have here is the dangerous combo of government propaganda and journalistic fraud. To help stop this, call the Committee for Concerned Journalists, 202-293-7394.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, giving you all the inside scoop from Washington, all the news from Washington, D.C. that the government does not want you to know. We're talking about Richard Clark. And if there's any person that the Bush administration does not want to hear from right now, it's Richard Clark. Richard Clark, of course, is now in a long line of Washington insiders that have come out to tell the truth about what's going on in the Bush administration. And if you want to comment on Richard Clark or anything else I'm saying, call right in, 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free, 877-577-2667. Let's look at some of these advisors. We have Paul O'Neill, who came out with his book just recently. He was the former Treasury Secretary, and he made clear that Bush would plan to invade Iraq back in January of 2001. And they said, oh, well, he's a disgruntled worker. Then you have Richard Foster. He worked for the Medicare the Health and Human Services worked on Medicare, and he said that the Bush administration knew that the bill was going to cost $150 billion more than the president said it was. He tried to tell Congress about it and was threatened with being fired. There's another one. Again, his boss is still working there. You got Joe Wilson, who came clean about the Bush administration lying about Saddam Hussein getting nuclear weapons in Niger, in Africa. And, of course, the Bush administration responded by outing his wife, Valerie Plame, as a CIA agent. Boy, I hope sure people are convicted for that treason. You have John DiIulio, the faith-based initiative, talking about Bush as the Mayberry Machiavellis, that really everything is driven by politics, that there really aren't any convictions except for, you know, helping corporations and stuff. Richard Clark, I think he's a lot harder to tear down, you know? They can call Joe Wilson a Democrat, and they can say Paul O'Neill was, you know, kind of kooky, maybe, and Richard Foster was a low-level bureaucrat. But Richard Clark? Richard Clark was the counterterrorism czar. They're going to say he doesn't know what he's talking about? So what we find in their attacks on Clark is they're all over the map. I mean, it's actually amusing if it weren't so serious. When Stephen Hadley, good old Stephen Hadley, deputy to Condoleezza Rice, now security advisor, when he's on 60 Minutes, he doesn't know at first what Clark says. He doesn't know, right? So he says that Clark is very dedicated, very knowledgeable about the issue. This is what Hadley says at first. He says, when the president came into office, one of the decisions we made was to keep Mr. Clark and his counterterrorism group intact, bring them into the new administration, a really unprecedented, very unusual decision, when there's been a transition. And so at first he praises Clark. But then when he finds out what Clark has to say, it gets a lot less nice, right? You find that the arguments start contradicting each other. They say, one of the worst, I think, was Vice President Cheney, who appeared on Rush Limbaugh. I guess he had an emergency interview on the radio show. And Cheney says on Rush Limbaugh, Limbaugh says, well, how in the world could Bush have kept this guy on as head of counterterrorism? Well, now Cheney doesn't say what Hadley says. He was dedicated, he was knowledgeable, he was committed, he knew what he was talking about. No, Cheney says, well, I wasn't directly involved in the decision. He was moved over to cybersecurity. I don't recall the exact time frame. He doesn't recall the exact time frame? Well, let me remind Vice President Cheney, if he'd been listening to my broadcast, he would know the exact time frame. Clark got so upset with the administration for not listening in to the terrorist threat that he asked in May or June of 01 to go to cybersecurity, but the transfer wasn't going to happen until October 2001. So in other words, when September 11th happened, Clark was still there doing counterterrorism. And let's see, you know, Dick Cheney, Vice President Cheney, maybe we can help remind you, you know, maybe you have a memory loss. Let me just try to remind you who Richard Clark was. He was the guy standing in your office on the morning of September 11th with Condoleezza Rice, minutes after the first attack, telling you that you better go down to your undisclosed hiding place and protect yourself while he takes charge of the White House. Do you remember that? You know, you think you might remember that, Vice President Cheney. He's also the guy that, do you remember Condi Rice said, Richard Clark, you're the crisis manager, what do you recommend? As he said on September 11th. He's also the guy that was standing in between you and Condoleezza Rice in the White House Situation Room on September 11th. In fact, you put your hand on his shoulder, Dick Cheney, and you said to Richard Clark, are you getting everything you need? Everybody doing what you want? You might also remember that Clark was the guy who asked you, Vice President Cheney, to request authorization from Bush to shoot down any hijacked planes. And you also remember him as the guy who briefed Bush when Bush finally returned to the White House. All that must have slipped your mind. I guess September 11th wasn't a very important day to you, huh, Vice President Cheney? You just weren't focusing? Is that the problem? Is that why you say that Clark was out of the loop? Come on. And then you get to Rice, and you get Condoleezza Rice's attacks. Now, again, Condoleezza Rice, who has been on so many different sides of this issue, I think she should resign. She has gone on every news channel known to man to attack Dick Clark's character, but she won't go and testify under oath before the 9/11 Commission. And so what does she say? Well, she seems to contradict as well Vice President Cheney, who said he was out of the loop. She's criticized Clark for failing with the Clinton administration, but then she also said that she kept Clark on because she trusted him for his terrorism policies. Well, if he failed, Ms. Rice, why did you keep him on? Okay? And then she goes on to say that, he just gave a laundry list of ideas to contain al-Qaeda. Laundry list of ideas. There was no plan, she says, just a laundry list of ideas. Failing to mention that same laundry list is exactly what Bush implemented after September 11th. So they're really in this strange bind. They're trying to criticize Clark under Clinton, right, saying Clinton didn't do enough. But everyone knows that Bush had to know more than Clinton because time had passed, more information had come in. How is it that Clinton, they felt, was obsessed with al-Qaeda? The other thing that you'll see, these spokespeople people going out, and they'll say, oh, well, we wanted to eliminate al-Qaeda. What she doesn't mention is, you know what, that was Clark's idea. that he'd been focusing on that since January 01, and they finally got around to it a week before September 11th. In fact, after she called it a laundry list of ideas that wasn't very important, but 2 days later on NBC, Rice said that he sent us a set of ideas that would perhaps help to roll back al-Qaeda. We acted on these very quickly. So she says that his ideas weren't worthwhile, and she says that we acted on them very quickly. Why did she act so quickly on ideas that weren't worthwhile? Can anyone explain that? What's going on here? She also said that President Bush had asked for a briefing on counterterrorism, but we later learned at the commission hearing, the 9/11 commission, that it was the CIA that asked for this hearing on counterterrorism. Rice has now given so many conflicting accounts. The only way to sort them out is for her to testify publicly under oath before the 9/11 commission. And if she's not willing to do that, I think she needs to step down. You know, Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, he testified publicly under oath. Sandy Berger did the same. Clinton and Gore have both said they're going to testify before the 9/11 commission. What is Rice doing? I mean, let's look at all the contradictions here. And there's so many, it's hard to write them all down. We have Deputy Secretary of State Armitage contradicting Rice that the White House had a strategy before 9/11 to attack al-Qaeda. You have CIA contradicting Rice that Bush requested that briefing I told you about. We have Rice saying on September 16th to put Iraq to the side, which is contradicted by the Pentagon on September 17th, a day later, directing military operations for Bush to begin invading. And so what are they doing? Now they're going and they're looking at Clark's letters to the president. They're looking at his resignation letter, and they're saying, well, you know, you weren't mean to the Bush administration in your resignation letter. You praised him for, you know, the job he did in your resignation letter. To which Clark responded, well, if I'd done otherwise, you know, I think it would have been considered rude, right? Then you'd attack me for not being loyal to the administration. They are all over the map here. I want to hear what you think. When we get back from commercial, call in. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. I want to know from you where you think this is going. Do you think this will damage the Bush administration politically? Do you think that Condoleezza Rice is on her last legs? Do you think that the arrogance will continue where they're not attacking his charges? They're not saying that he's got the facts wrong. They're saying that Richard Clark is a bad man. But it's really hard to take this registered Republican, dedicated public servant for 30 years, and it's very, very hard, I think, to question his motives. What do you think? The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Call in, toll free. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after these messages.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A Pyrrhic victory for opponents to a Department of Labor plan to increase overtime pay exemptions. Democrats in the U.S. Senate managed to amend a trade and tax bill with a provision that would stop the department from cutting off OT to as many as 8 million people. Efforts to remove the provision from the bill have failed, but instead of keeping debate alive on the issue, Senate Republicans yesterday pulled the legislation from the floor. This leaves the Department of Labor free to move forward with the overtime massacre, and it's scheduled to go down on Tuesday.
15 years ago this month, an Exxon Valdez oil tanker hit a reef off the coast of Alaska, spilling millions of gallons of oil into the ocean, devastating local wildlife and communities depending on these now contaminated natural resources for survival. Hundreds of workers who were employed by Exxon as part of the toxic cleanup are now getting sick, and Alaska Community Action on Toxics members are asking the federal government to add more than $100 million to the $900 million settlement it reached with Exxon in 1991. Many workers like Phyllis LeJoe suffer from respiratory trouble, neurological impairment, liver disease, and skeletal deterioration.
I now have emphysema, asthma, multiple allergies, chemical sensitivities, and I also developed diabetes. I'm a mess, let's put it that way. The papers were full of articles about dead animals, but I never saw one report in any newspaper of any of my friends.
Exxon denies any responsibility for the workers' illnesses, suggesting these people could have been exposed to crude oil chemicals elsewhere. It's unclear as to whether Senator Tom Stevens will support the reopener request.
6,500 part-time workers at Walt Disney World have their first union contract. It raises their minimum wage, implements a grievance process, and awards seniority benefits to part-timers. The workers ratified the deal on Wednesday. It took more than a year for the company to recognize the union and seriously negotiate the new contract. Now Disney World turns its attention to negotiations with more than 25,000 full-time union workers at the park whose contract expires in May.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 93 years ago this week, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory in New York City caught fire. 146 mostly young immigrant women burnt alive because the owner had locked them in the factory. The disaster led to the creation of a series of state laws that dramatically improved safety conditions within factories. Yet fires and explosions are still a workplace hazard. The Department of Labor says fires and explosions killed more than 600 people in the last 5 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the explosive charges of Richard Clark. A lot of us knew that George Bush was stonewalling the commission. I mean, do you remember who George Bush wanted? See if any of my callers remember. 877-57-SCOOP. Toll-free, 877-577-2667. Who can remember who George Bush originally decided to head the commission? I'll tell you at the end of the hour. But I think that's a sign. And remember also that I don't know of anyone being fired. Did anything go wrong on September 11th? Clark thinks so. He was apologizing to people. Why hasn't anyone been fired? Why hasn't anyone, you know, taken the heat for making this huge mistake, for 3,000 Americans dying? It's amazing to me that the administration officials are talking about, you know, they want to encourage, they said that Clinton should have responded to the USS Cole, which occurred in October 2000, and yet, according to Richard Clark, it was the Bush administration that said they didn't want to respond because, hey, that was something that happened on Clinton's watch. You know, we're not responsible for a terrorist that attacks the United States if they don't do it on our watch. Can you imagine? That was told to him twice. It's really going to be hard for them to attack his credibility. They're trying. They're throwing all out at him. They said that, oh, well, you know, Clark wants a high-level position in the Kerry administration, except Clark just said under oath that he's not interested in a position in the Kerry administration. So I want to hear from you. Do you think the attack machine is going to work? The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you from?
My name is Edward, and I'm from New York.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Condoleezza Rice really needs to testify in public, and I really think some of my fellow New Yorkers who have family that were killed or injured in 9/11 need to get on the air and start complaining that Condoleezza Rice needs to testify in public. I think that might be the thing that will push her into testifying.
I think it's a good point, Edward. You know, it's good to use these things as a call to action, not just get angry, but actually do something about it. So I agree with you. I think people should be writing and encouraging and call your member of Congress.
Well, you know, I have another problem,
yeah,
too. I'm not sure what the Republicans on the 9/11 commission are going to do. I didn't know the answer to your question as to who originally was appointed to be the head of the 9/11 commission.
I'll get to that at the end of the hour, I promise.
All right, but it seems to me that the commission itself is not pushing hard enough to get Condoleezza Rice to testify. And I think it's absolutely shameful that with all my fellow Americans who have died in this particular terrible incident that took place in 9/11, that somebody is trying to use executive privilege to avoid testifying.
I couldn't agree with you more. Thanks very much for your call, Edward. Listen, I agree with Edward that Condoleezza Rice has to testify. I'm not sure I agree, though, that the 9/11 Commission has been bad. I actually think they've been pretty good. One thing I do notice, though, is the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans on the commission. If you look at Richard Benveniste or Jamie Gorelick or Senator Kerry from Nebraska, they are asking tough questions of Bush administration officials. They're also asking tough questions of Richard Clark. They want to find out, you know, what the Clinton administration did and the Bush administration did. I think they're really trying to get to the bottom of this. What struck me is that what the Republican members of the commission are doing is they're just trying to knock Clark. You had former Governor Thompson of Illinois going up there and saying exactly what Ed from New Jersey did when he called me. Hey, isn't this 180 degrees? And he showed, and that's why I thought this is what Ed was talking about, he showed the background briefing where Fox News broke their off-the-record promise and showed where Clark had been told by the Bush administration, make this thing seem as positive as you can, and he did. And he didn't lie, but he gave a spin, as you're required to do often when you work for the President of the United States. And I thought Thompson just looked like an idiot. He said to Clark, well, isn't this a question of a different morality when you, you know, act as a spokesperson for the president? And Clark said, no, I think it's politics. And after right after that, the families of the victims clapped. I mean, what about Scott McClellan? Look at what he does for the president. You don't actually think he believes what he says, do you? You don't think so. Ari Fleischer, do you think he believes what he says? Come on. But Clark didn't lie. What he did was he emphasized the positive, and that's unfortunately what you have to do sometimes in politics. The number here is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. You can also send me an email by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. I have an email here from Ben. Ben's one of my conservative listeners that emails me a lot. Hey, Ben, I wish you'd call in sometime, not just challenge me by email, but okay, all right. Here's Ben's email. He says, okay, Mark, do you have any idea how long it took to build the Predator? I talked about the fact that Clark wanted to arm the Predator, that the Predator had found Osama bin Laden during Bush's reign, and had it been armed, they could have killed him before September 11th. So Ben writes, okay, Mark, do you have any idea how long it took to build the Predator? I do, because aerospace is my career. It took 20 years at least. You cannot just strap a missile on it. It would take literally years to integrate that type of a system, and perhaps would have required an entirely different airplane based on exactly how the aircraft was designed. Well, Ben, that sounds like a pretty strong argument. Hey, you know, it would take years to do it. Except I got a problem, and I'm not an aerospace engineer, you know, I don't claim to know the first thing about it, but I do know this, we armed the Predator in October 2001. Within a month after September 11th, we armed the Predator. That was in Richard Clark's testimony. So I'm afraid, Ben, if we, on September 11th, gave the order to arm the Predator and could do it in a month, what would have happened if we gave the order in February? Are you really arguing that somehow it could be done in October of 2001. It couldn't have been done in February. I'm afraid you've a bit out to argue yourself there, Ben. Hey, if you disagree, give me a call, 877-57-SCOOP. You also write, Ben, another thing, airplanes were not trying to kill Giuliani. They were trying to kill Bush. Okay, they were trying to kill lots of Americans, but fine, all right. Why would he take the risk of showing himself when he is at risk? That would have put Bush at risk along with every person around him. Be careful what you say. You know what? I think not that Bush should have been out in the White House front lawn giving a speech, but in Air Force One, he could have gotten on the video phone and he could have spoken as the President of the United States to Americans, telling them to you know, this fateful day, September 11th, to stay strong, to stay courageous. I remember September 11th. I remember that they argued that Bush was on a plane because the terrorists were going to go after his plane. Now, I don't know how a civilian jet was going to be steered into Air Force One. Is that their argument? I'm not saying Bush should have stayed in the White House. I'm not saying that. I'm saying he should have spoken up while he was on Air Force One on the run. Also, Ben writes, be careful what you say. You just made a comment about if a plane had hit the Capitol building. Can you imagine? You made it sound like that would be far more devastating than New York City. No. No, I think it would be equally devastating. I think that what happened on September 11th at the Pentagon and, of course, at the World Trade Center, and also in the fields of Pennsylvania was devastating. I just pointed out that an attack on the Capitol would be equally devastating. Hey, got a caller on the line. Caller, what's your first name and where are you from?
This Roy. I'm out here in New Mexico.
Hey, Roy, New Mexico. What do you think about all this?
Well, to paraphrase or directly quote a favorite talk show host of mine who is not on the air right now, have I told you how much I hate these thugs?
Yep.
These people are despicable.
They are. What's interesting to me is that just a complete lack of humility. I mean, here you have Clark, who tried so hard to stop the attacks, apologize to the families of September 11th, and Bush and all his advisors not once have said they did anything wrong.
The lady that is representing the 9/11 families was on softball last night.
Which one? Karen Breitsweiler?
Right.
Yep.
And Timmy threw her a nice one. He said, I'm just going to shut up, just, you know, say what you want to say. And she was talking. And then he got into the Condi deal. Should Condi be required to? She says, yeah.
To testify, of course.
And he said something. And she said, there's only two alternatives. She is absolutely totally incompetent, or she is totally a liar. That is the only two.
She could be both.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that she can't be both. I mean, you know.
No.
I think she could be incompetent and a liar.
Total liar.
Well, I'm afraid that's the case.
This thing where these despicable people are coming out now and accusing Clark of being a racist.
Oh yeah. I mean, come on. I heard Robert Novak say that.
Ann Coulter.
Oh, Ann Coulter.
Ann Coulter. You know what an artist she is.
Yeah.
He was sitting, and I forget exactly how it was phrased, but I'm sure you'll see it. And that was on the GE-owned network piece of crap station with Scarborough, dead girl under the desk show and
right.
Whatever.
Right.
But it is just, these people are so despicable.
They really are. I mean,
my mother used to tell me, you are known by the company you keep. And as incompetent as Bush is, and I don't care if he's a good Christian man or not. Anybody, which is doubtful, but anybody that would surround himself with sociopaths like he has deserves to be voted out of office.
You know, I don't even think Bush really knows what's going on. You know, what really convinced me was the book by Paul O'Neill, which I read cover to cover, and I recommend in addition to reading Richard Clark's book. And he describes how he gave an hour presentation to the president about the deficit, and Bush didn't ask any questions. He talked about how he'd worked for prior presidents. He'd worked for Ford, and he'd worked for Nixon, I think he said. And they would just pummel him with questions, as a president should. He found out he was given a monologue. And that's why I've often described Bush as the boy king. To me, he's Prince George. He's someone who doesn't really know what's going on, but has all his daddy's advisors around him. And so it is Dick Cheney making the decisions and Karl Rove. I don't think it is George Bush.
I forget where I heard it, but it was just in the last day or two. Somebody said this bunch is like a bunch of what do you call the kids who get the trust accounts?
Trust babies. Trust account babies. Yeah.
They got their money too
trust
damn
fund
early.
People. Right. Yeah. Well, that's exactly what it is.
A Democratic thing last night. That was a hoot.
Yeah, that's why I call him Prince George, because he thinks he's been entitled to rule all this time, and he likes to, you know, wear his crown, right? Dress up in the flight suit and stand on the rubble and say, we're going to get the terrorists. Bring it on, he says to the terrorists, which is not a smart thing to say.
And as a draft-dodging vet, you know, I went down and I joined the Navy Reserves because I was going to get drafted. I was flunking out of college.
Right.
But damn it, I joined the Reserves. I fulfilled my duty. I went active. And I don't know. I just get so, again, God, I hate these people.
Well, you know, I'm sure you'll work with me to get these people out of office. Hey, Roy, thanks for calling.
I owe it to my grandson to get them out.
Well, we're going to do our best. Listen, New Mexico is an important state. You know, you could go either way there. I hope you'll work hard to get John Kerry.
I absolutely go straight. This year, I'm going straight Democrat.
Good. Good. Because I'll tell you, we need Democrats in Congress, too, because you got to have somebody
That's
watching
right.
over them. Hey, Roy, thanks so much for your call. I appreciate it. Call in again sometime. We got to wrap up here. A couple more things. I am going to tell you who was first in charge of the commission. One of my listeners actually emailed it to me. Good for you. I'll get that in the very last minute. First, I want to read a quick email from John. Doesn't say where he's from, and I'm not going to say your last name, John. But John writes, didn't Condoleezza Rice, Rumsfeld, and every other administration official with a microphone say that Sandy Berger, that's, of course, Clinton's national security advisor, never scheduled a meeting with them on the dangers of al-Qaeda in any transmission meeting prior to them taking over the White House? Do you remember? Because Berger said he did, and Rice said they didn't. Well, as my listener, John, points out, and Condoleezza Rice's editorial in the Washington Post, dated March 22nd, just this week, she now states that not only were they informed, but they adopted several of these ideas, unquote. Good point, John. Good point. They didn't meet with us, but we adopted their ideas. That's just kind of like Clark was out of the loop, but we took his ideas. Or he wanted to attend all these meetings, which they say, and what good could meetings do? And then they criticize him for not attending enough meetings. I think they're all over, and I think that what's going to happen is Condoleezza Rice is just going to have to testify. Hey, folks, here's the answer to my trivia question. Joel Kaplan wrote in. He got it. Joel, you win a prize. Who was first scheduled to run the 9/11 Commission? Henry Kissinger, that paragon of virtue. Henry Kissinger, that guy who we all know would never do anything untrue or any way, you know, harmful to America. Kissinger was going to run the commission. And luckily, Kissinger cared more about his private clients, where he'd have to disclose who they are, you know, various dictators around the globe, and he didn't want to disclose them, and so he bowed off the commission. But if there's any question of whether George Bush wanted to get to the bottom of this, just remember who he first hired, Henry Kissinger. Hey, that's it for the Inside Scoop, folks. I've really enjoyed these couple hours. It goes fast. Tune in this Sunday at 8 o'clock. I'm going to be repeating a lot of these topics. I'm going to give you some more detail about what Richard Clark said. If you missed some of it, I'm even going to play some of what he said. You'll hear it on the air Sunday at 8. And then, of course, all next week on the Inside Scoop, we'll be on every weekday, 3 to 5, with more of the Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington that the government does not want you to know. And if you want to advertise or sponsor the Inside Scoop programs, you can go to my website, RadioInsideScoop.com. And hey, while you're there, give a donation to Radio Power. They could use your funds or helping to stream this show. So tune in this Sunday at 8 p.m. and then every weekday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time here on the Inside Scoop.